When I was playing my Mario World stream, I actually had a question that I kept asking to the audience at the time, who was nobody, but maybe somebody was going to answer for me. So I, at the time, I was drinking pink lemonade, right?
Sure. The best lemonade.
It's delicious. What is the flavor of pink lemonade?
Joy? Just joy.
Oh, okay. I couldn't, because it tastes different than regular lemonade.
I think it's a mental thing, you know, like, maybe it doesn't taste any different at all, because there's no such thing as pink lemons. It's probably just food coloring, but, you know, your brain just perceives it, and it's like, ah, this is better, this is nicer.
I thought, was it just food coloring? Because pink is cooler than just yellow. Like, who wants to just drink a yellow drink that's not Mountain Dew?
Right.
But then I asked Google, and Google said that it's either strawberry, watermelon, or cherry flavoring. But then I thought to myself, well, they have strawberry lemonade.
Yeah.
And they have like a watermelon lemonade, like a watermelon kiwi lemonade. But then I never thought of cherry, like a cherry lemonade.
I don't know. I'm not a cherry guy. So
I know.
I can't say.
I mean,
and if that's true, then I'll have to give up pink lemonade. So don't do that to me.
Hey, Code Red is the best Mountain Dew next to Baja.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh? Well, Baja Blast is only good if you get it from Taco Bell.
I mean, it is the nectar of the gods.
Speaking of overlords from beyond the stars, Josh, what are we talking about today?
Today, well, first off, this is a Cast of the Past where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom137.
And today we are going to be talking about Destroy All Humans, the 2005 hit.
Oh, it's an OG. I believe they classified it as a cult classic when they announced the 2020 remake.
I mean, it really is. I will say that this is a pretty good definition of a cult classic video game. It's one of those games that kind of died off, but there's like a weird following to it.
I would agree with you. I would also say that, you know, the first game, which is what we're talking about, was an actual hit, like a hit. Because it launched a franchise. It's just the franchise went downhill very quickly. And then maybe that's how it became cult, because not only did the franchise kind of get shut down, but for a while its publisher got shut down.
And yeah. I think we need to definitely dig into that.
And
today,
then from the ashes, THQ Nordic arises.
Yes.
The Viking versions of THQ.
But before we go and talk about Destroy All Humans, we got to take a trip back to 2005.
Yes. You set me up, Josh. What do I need to know about this important year?
There was a couple things that I saw and I was like, ooh, these are interesting little fun facts. So I'm going to give you three good ones here. Hopefully.
Three good research questions. All right, hit me up.
The first question: Mark Zuckerberg offered to sell Facebook to what company for the asking price of $75 million?
Ooh. That's interesting, because I'm actually listening to a podcast about Facebook, but the only sell that I can actually think of at the moment is, I know in 2011-ish, Yahoo offered to buy Facebook for $1 billion, and they almost did it. So I do not know, Josh. What happened in 2005?
So Mark Zuckerberg tried to sell Facebook for $75 million to a company called MySpace.
Oh, well, that kind of makes sense. They probably saw them, you know, encroaching on their territory and was like, let's just buy them and kill the competition.
Mark Zuckerberg wanted to sell it.
No, that's what I mean. MySpace was like, oh, here comes Facebook creeping up. Like,
MySpace rejected it.
Oh, Mark made the offer. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Those fools. Sorry. No pity. You idiot.
Yeah.
Josh, and everyone watching, if you're old enough, you want to hear a fun fact? I don't know if you remember this, Josh.
Tell me.
Like at least 2 or 3 years ago, MySpace announced that due to like a server accident, they lost the majority of everything that was stored up to like 2013 or 14, I think.
Yeah.
So good news, Josh. Most of our generation can run for office because most of our embarrassing past got erased. JK, be nice online. Don't do dirty things. Anyway, next.
Number two, or Mario at the end of every castle in Super Mario World. He's...
Woohoo!
Star Wars Episode 3 was the number one movie in America that year. What was the number two movie in America?
Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
That was the number three movie in America.
Mm. 2005, there was something in between both of those. Chronicles of Narnia?
The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Okay. Because I had to think of when Prince Caspian came out, and it was like, oh, wait, so like 3 years, yeah, that tracked. Okay.
Which I think is still an awesome movie. I think it holds up pretty well.
I haven't seen any of them. I want to, though. It's like on my to-do list.
Okay. 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 As long as it's on your to-do list. The final question that I have. This one might be tricky.
Of course.
So in 2005, a poker game was played. And in that poker game, two people formed a bond that would go on to be running 15 years later. Who was that bond?
Matt Schell and what's Rob's last name? No.
Is it you and me?
It is us. Yes. 15 years ago, we played a poker game and I won your entire life.
Yeah, you did. That's why I'm doing this podcast. For $100.
But yeah, I was looking, I was like, oh man, like, That's exactly around the same time, like when I was working at Bonanza, and it's probably around the same time of the year when this came out too.
Josh, can I start by telling you the story of a quaint little developer known as THQ?
Ooh, tell me more.
So THQ was an American video game company, and they lived the dream. They started from humble beginnings in 1990, and then they grew largely, and I think most viewers would probably know this if they're familiar with any of their games, due to the incredible run they had with licensing big intellectual properties and turning them into video games.
Would you say that they were the LJN of the 2000s?
LJN?
LJN. They are notorious for 80s and 90s licensed games that suck. So you think of, like, the Jaws game, the Friday the 13th game, the Nightmare on Elm Street game from the NES, like, all those games, they were all LJN. It's the rainbow logo.
Oh, okay. I've seen things that do parodies of logos, and I never knew what the rainbow one, what the origin was. So, okay.
They were a toy manufacturer that went into making video games.
The fools. But anyway, yes. So, Josh, what I... say THQ, what games come to mind? Because there has to be some. They were everywhere. Talk to me.
Well, yeah, I mean,
your grade school, your high school years, where did you see that logo in front of?
A lot of wrestling games, if I'm not mistaken. They were a big part of the wrestling games.
THQ, for a very long time, held the licensing rights to WWF/E-based games. Most of the SmackDown versus Raw franchise, you got them because of THQ. Up until THQ declared bankruptcy, spoiler alert, and lost the license to 2K, they handled everything. So I figured you would get that one.
Oh, yeah.
Any other ones come to mind?
I mean, they did some of, like, the Nickelodeon games, if I'm not mistaken. They did Battle for Bikini Bottom, the original one, before THQ Nordic re-released it.
Yeah, yeah, they absolutely did.
I mean, they were, like, the Jimmy Neutron games that were out. If it was a children's license, like of a cartoon or something like that, THQ's name was on top of it, to the point where I think they oversaturated the market with their own games because they were just churning out 4, 5, 6 out of 10 games. You know what I mean? Like rating wise, like constant, their games that they constantly released were about a 4 out of 10 or a 5 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10. I mean, they had a reputation and it was like, oh yeah, that's a THQ game.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Dozens of Nickelodeon licenses, some Disney licenses, most notably, I think it's funny, they did the Incredibles sequel game, Rise of the Underminer, which for a while was the official sequel to The Incredibles until Incredibles 2. Also, some DreamWorks titles I found in my research. They did a Kung Fu Panda game. But it wasn't all licensing, because they had a few franchises of their own. And right now, we're going to talk about one of the biggest ones for a while, as we said, Destroy All Humans. But THQ was not in this alone.
Did you recognize the other developer at the head of this game, Josh?
It was Pandemic Studios.
Yeah. Now, what games come to mind for Pandemic for you, Josh?
I think it was the Mercenary games, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Have you played Mercenaries?
I have not. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
They did Battlefront.
The original,
the first
Star
one,
Wars,
right?
Battlefront.
Yeah.
The first two?
Okay.
Yep.
All
right. Well, yeah, Pandemic was, in my opinion, noted for making some really cool games. They made their mark, basically, with Star Wars Battlefront in 2004. And then we had Battlefront 2 in 2005, which is still, in my opinion, the best, arguably one of the best Star Wars games ever.
I was
going to
say, yeah, don't even start that fight, because you'll lose it.
All right.
It's a top three Star Wars game for me. Probably at the top. But anyway.
That could be an upcoming list episode.
Yeah. But then they kind of also just made an impact with these really interesting open world games like Mercenaries, I apologize, because there's more than one. There's three. And you travel in these big open world environments and you're a mercenary. So you're hired to do like destruction contracts, target acquiring contracts, things like that. Big open world game. This, Destroy All Humans, was a follow-up, kind of like an open world game in its own right. Eventually, they were bought by EA, and like anything that's bought by a bigger company, it eventually loses its sense of identity and dies. And Pandemic is gone. But
Pandemic's gone. Middle, Visceral Games is gone.
Yeah.
Like,
here's hurts.
To see it, as the kids would say.
Yeah, that's a topic episode. Dead game published. Dead game developers. Yeah.
But at the nexus point of THQ and Pandemic, we have Destroy All Humans. So, Josh, what is Destroy All Humans? Give us a sense of what this game is.
So it is a mission-based alien exploration game for pretty much using every alien cliche and just jam-packing it into a PS2 disc.
I absolutely agree with what you said about every cliche. Question for you, did you play this upon its release back in the day?
So I did. I played it on the Xbox originally. And then a couple months ago, they gave it to us free again on the Xbox, which I think I have a copy for the PS2, but I wasn't going to dust off a PS2, hook it up just to be able to play this. If they gave it to me for free, I could play it on my Xbox One. And sure. I went in there. So I played it on my Xbox One. And yeah, I mean, how did you play it on the Xbox One as well?
Originally it was the inverse. I played it on the PlayStation 2 when I got it back in the day. And yes, it was free on the Xbox a few months ago, obviously, probably to generate hype for the remake. So slapped it on to my digital library and I replayed it on the Xbox One.
So,
yes.
The where do you want to start? Like,
well, can I tell you an interesting tidbit about the development of this game?
Yeah, let's start there.
So, this game was pitched by Matt Harding, who was an On the Rise video game developer. And it was pitched almost as a joke, because Matt Harding was kind of getting sick of the video game landscape at the time, where everything was just, sandbox murder. And he made a passing comment about, you should make a game about destroying all humans. And Pandemic literally was like, oh yeah, we should do that. And so it kind of got settled down to an alien theme. And at first it was going to be dark, like really dark. And Matt Harding, trying to at least make make lemonade out of lemons, you know, was like, well, why don't we make it a satirical take on 1950s B movies instead? But Matt Harding didn't stay on too much longer in development. He legitimately got burnt out on the gaming industry. And so he left. He found some success in a series of YouTube videos that he created called Where the Hell is Matt? And that's just, you know, he just floated off into the ether. But THQ and Pandemic went forward with this game. And like you said earlier, you were talking about how it's a lot of cliches of like aliens and alien movies and stuff. That's totally what they said they were going for. They wanted to take all of these classic ideas and just throw them into a sandbox and see how the player could interact with them.
Yeah, it's definitely has a lot of references for B movies and alien movies and alien references and making fun of America, hard. And there's one really awesome scene that like fully just shows how hard they went at making fun of America. And it's when they show the map of the United States. Did you remember that part?
Where go pan it across the whole thing.
Well, let me see. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
So it's a map of the United States and, well, it's a map of the world, but the United States is dead center and it just says like America or USA or something like that. And then around it has like an arrow pointing to Japan and it says ninjas here. And then you have Canada. It says lots of beavers. And then it's over. It's like over in the Middle East. It just says sandy is sandy here. And it's like, then I think the whole top part is like commies.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like,
it takes that. Yeah.
It takes that inflated post-World War II ego of America. You know, we're the best. And just completely makes fun of it.
It really like it is. I think it's a perfect definition of a cult classic, but it's also a perfect definition of like a C/B ranked game because it is stiff. Really bad. It's stiff at times. The controls are they're aged, but I understand we were limited back in 15 years ago to what we have right now.
Yeah. So it's a third person game. I guess I would, you know, the immediate comparison is Grand Theft Auto 3. You know, like you're dead center in the middle and you're running around. What kind of mechanics would you describe this game having? It's mostly tool related. Would you agree?
Yeah. It I mean, honestly, it's a third person shooter.
Yeah.
Like for the most part. And then you have your vehicular, like moments and I don't know. It's just really rough. So the story of this game actually started off pretty interesting where it was an atomic bomb was going off at like Area 51, or as you find out in the game, I think it was Area 42. But an atomic bomb was going off as a UFO was flying over. So that was the downed crash in Roswell, which was kind of like an alternate like
Rockwell in this game.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, Rockwell. And it just added a nice little that shows you how aliens came to Earth, you know, opposed to the Area 51 story. But let's talk about Jack Nicholson. I mean, Crypto.
Yeah.
Because.
So.
All right. So as Joss mentioned, there's a downed alien on Earth and his people, the Furons, find out about this and they're upset. So the alien that crashed on Earth, his name is Crypto 136. And the gimmick of this alien race is that they don't reproduce like us. They just clone each other. So, like, if we were Furons, Josh, if you tripped and fell down the steps tomorrow, I would just type a machine and Josh 37 would come out. And that's the new Josh that just operates, you know? So, Crypto 137, the player character, he's the next clone in line. And his leader, which I believe his name's Ortho Pox, but they just call him Pox, they're like, ugh, Earth has one of our aliens. We gotta go get him. And that's the initial story, because this evolves very rapidly. And Crypto 137, yeah, he talks like Jack Nicholson.
Let me get this straight. You sent me, him, Crypto 136, to a hostile planet, and he's disappeared. Maybe captured. Maybe even being tortured as we speak.
It was to the point where I was getting so frustrated every time he was talking. was like,
it didn't work.
It didn't work all the time. Like after the initial ha, it's like,
But yeah, like he just, his character tried to be so overly cool and he really wasn't. Like, I just, he did, there was no charm. There was no, and I think it had to deal with a lot of the lack of the facial expressions that he was making, because he always just seemed like he was grumpy, and the way that his eyes were set up, it always looked like he was wearing sunglasses, which is a very Jack Nicholson thing. But oh, yeah, he always was like, I'm gonna talk like this the whole time. It's almost like a mixture between Jack Nicholson and Roz from Monsters Incorporated.
Yeah, no, for real. So, did this bother you? I got a question. So I need you to hold perfectly still. Now turn your head to your left a little bit. Sorry, you're right. My bad. And I'm going to turn my head a little bit. Okay. So to see the positions we're in?
Yeah.
Now talk using only your mouth and don't move the rest of your body whatsoever. Josh, how are you today?
I am great.
Yes. The next mission in this game is this. There's so many conversations in this where they do these little intercoms and the models look just like that. And it's so unpolished and rough. Yeah, it's annoying.
Listen, out of all the notes that I wrote down, I think one one line is it just perfectly sums up my experience with this game. And it just says, it's very 2005.
Mm-hmm. Like it's so stuck in that period of games, you know what I mean?
It's poop humor.
Oh, yeah.
Fart humor, like, yeah. Butt humor, like it's all dick and fart jokes.
It's the, and like not only that, so every mayor of every town is somebody doing their best throwaway JFK impersonation. You know, because like
the Simpsons,
or the mayor from the Simpsons. Yeah.
Yeah. Mayor Quimby had not been done to death just yet. So they were like, yeah, JFK is the mayor. Let's just do that. Yeah. Like even in terms of historical pop culture, it's the same things. All the cops are grumpy Irishmen, you know, because the trope of Irish cops was still kind of kicking around then.
So I've been thinking about this since playing the game, and I told Becca this and she's like, Why did you think that? Do you think aliens think that we're all just walking Death Stars?
What do you mean by that?
Well, they always keep trying to find the smallest hole in our body and shove something into it, like hoping that we blow up or something like that. There's so many conversations about anal probes in this game.
I mean, what is the human heating venting system if not...
It's the exhaust port.
The exhaust port. Yeah.
I was just like, we're just walking Death Stars to an alien.
And the Death Star trench is the butt crack.
Oh god.
Now we're lowering ourselves to the humor level of this game.
It's very
Josh.
2005. Listen, 15 years ago, the world was different. The internet was the Wild West. Like,
yeah. For good and for bad.
Yeah. So I found myself, though, after all of this, getting so frustrated because it was rinse, wash, and repeat every single thing. Go in, kill these people, pop all their brains out, collect DNAs, and the DNA, 10 DNA things a person, and then you need to collect 400 of them, and it's just like, God, it's so time-consuming.
Can I just do the plot in like 30 seconds?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because as you said, it's not complicated. It's simple, but drawn out. So Crypto goes to Earth because he's got to find his predecessor. They start, you know, attacking some humans who are giving them trouble. And then Pox is like, hey, listen, our cloning technology is dying because we've stretched out all the alien DNA. Here's what we're going to do to correct that. It turns out that Pox just always knew that hundreds of years ago, members of their Furon alien race went to Earth on shore leave, and as a result of shore leave activities, every human alive in the 1950s setting have a little bit of Furon DNA in their brains. So your job becomes not only rescue your predecessor, but start harvesting humans as much as you can so that you can recover Furon DNA in order to keep your race's cloning birthing process going. So as Josh said, from there, it's just land in a stereotypical American setting, whether it's like small town, 1950s, 60s beachside surfer town, or cheesy, stereotypical 1950s metropolis. Go on missions where you attack humans, blend in with humans, but overall the goal is just suck their brains out for brain stems while also destroying them and rescuing your predecessor, Crypto 136. And then there's some governance shenanigans with like an FBI. Majestic.
Yeah, the MIB. Yes,
the Men in Black. There you go. Yes, the MIB of this game. And you're always outsmarting them. Majestic is actually trying to brainwash the human race for their own ends. And then you realize, well, we can just take Majestic's technology and brainwash humans so that we can collect their DNA without any pushback. And that's just what happens. You defeat Majestic, you take over their brainwashing technology, and the end of the game is the implications that the Furons are now running Earth. And sometimes it's funny, but sometimes it's not.
The one thing with this game, too, that I just couldn't understand, like, every character... Actually, I'm sorry, not every character. Every female character in this game is so overly sexualized. Like, they're all... The horniest women in video game came from Destroy All Humans.
Arguably, yeah.
You abduct the beauty queen to take her and give her an anal probe, and she's, like, screaming in joy. Like, what? And then you know, the MIB people meet somebody and she's like, oh my God, I just want to just hop on him or something like that. And she's like, what? Like, and then you're listening to their conversations and they're like, the women are talking about the guys so weirdly. Like, the women in this game are so horny that it's so weird. And then the guys are like, oh, football, baseball, wow, wow, the Yankees.
Right.
Yeah. They're either pretending to be more manly than they are, or they're dumb. Like, they're really dumb.
Yeah.
It's just one or the other.
I mean, I guess it is a huge cliche of America.
Yeah.
They're going for that satirical, you know, I assume the goal is in the 1950s, you know, America was very prude and not very sexualized, so... The joke is that all the women are actually secretly horn dogs.
Yeah.
You know, but it just goes on forever. And it doesn't... There's no higher level to the joke. That's just the joke. So you get tired of it.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say were some of the good moments of the game?
The good moments of the game are arguably just the mechanics, if we can talk about them real quick. I think Crypto has a large variety of weapons at his disposal that make for fun gameplay. He's got a jetpack, so you can jump, but you can also give yourself a couple propulsion boosts and then a hover down. So that's good for navigating, in my opinion. Did you like that?
Yeah, I liked some of the mechanics that he had. My favorite was the like the flamethrower thing that he had, where it shot the big fireball out at people and just like turned them to ash.
The disintegrator. So his gun is like multi-tiered. There's a disintegrator, as Josh mentioned. There's a zapper, which you can just chain lightning attacks together and zap multiple humans. The most fun, obviously, in my opinion, is the anal probe like gun setting, where you charge up a shot, and if you manage to make it perfectly connect with a human, they run around holding their butts for a few seconds screaming before they poop out their brain. I never found that not funny. That's the 2005 teenager in me.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. I think this game just, like I said, it's very 2005, but it is I'm a 15, 16 year old kid and dick and fart jokes are hilarious to me. Like, yeah, I mean, it is a product of its time. The only problem that I run into, though, is this game came out around the same time as Resident Evil 4 and God of War.
I believe. Same year? Oh, both same year, right?
Yeah. And okay. Shadow of the Colossus. So
obviously.
You have three really big hit games that are all genre-defining type games. Like, the God of War games was a huge staple of the PS2. Like, it pushed that console to, you know, what it could do. And you got this. Like, at times it seems like it was cheaply made. And it was very, like I said, we talked about it being very stiff. But you had games come out prior, like games like Halo and games like Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City. And maybe San Andreas came out before this.
It was
04. So it came out before this. Like those games pushed the boundaries to it. This game, I don't know, man. It's kind of like a muddy mess. And it just seemed like, hey, we don't have really a good idea, so let's just go ahead and just keep recycling the same thing over and over again.
I absolutely agree. It doesn't seem to be trying in terms of its peers at the time. I will say the game is the most fun when you're allowed to just destroy all humans. So, but that comes after so much trudging through the repetitiveness. You know, you start fairly linear. You know, they put you on a path and it's like, here's an objective. You can only do this. And after you do all those, the rest of the area opens up. So the first level, it's a farm and you're doing missions on the farm. And then after you do them, the farm and the surrounding little like roadside residential areas open up and you can do whatever you want. You can run around messing with the people. You can get your flying saucer and burn down buildings. And as you get to bigger and bigger levels, those opportunities open up. And that's when it's fun, and when you can just mess around and do what you want.
But when you are tied to the missions and it's like, okay, well, I've already done this mission. Or it's like, hey, you ran out of DNA. Now you have to go and collect 600 heads. And I'm like, why? Like, try to figure, like, collect them all together. Add them. Like, just and give like, me a bank already that I have. And just let me just keep adding to that.
Yeah.
And that might be a quality of life thing that gets changed in the remake. But
yeah, we'll speculate that on that towards the end.
Yeah.
I also wanted to just see while we're venting the kind of hub mechanic system, if you could even call this a hub level or something. After every mission, or even like if you're in sandbox mode, you can have an option to return to the mothership. And that basically kind of just takes you to the main level of the game where you can go to the lab and Pox will upgrade your gun or your flying saucer. Or you can go to the mission select screen and pick where you want to go to next or what area you want to revisit. And that's fine. But it becomes really restrictive because it's like, first mission, abduct some farmers and eliminate them before you're seen. Okay. You can't start the next mission until you go back to the mothership, go back to the menu, reselect the farm, and then fly back down to it again. In my opinion, there's no reason for that. Like, just put mission markers in the world. Don't make me go in this endless...
Games have done that before this came out.
Mm-hmm. GTA, like we said.
I will say, though, I think next to the map thing that was just over cocky America, the best part and the part that probably made me audibly laugh so much was the reference to the room in the game.
Oh, I don't know if I caught that. What was the reference?
So there's the part where a majestic guy is talking to these two people that are out on a date. And of course, she's all horn dogged up. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do what's best for my country and blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah, you better do it before the commies get you or something like that. It says something about the commies. And he's like, these commies are tearing me apart.
Oh, I didn't even clue into that. And that's really interesting because the room only would have come out like a year and a half before this game launched. And so that means maybe during its development. So these people were probably, if they knew about it, were really in on the room.
Right.
Early.
Right. But oh, I mean, I would just assume that it was a reference to who else would do it that exact way. So over the top,
like
fists clenched in the air, screaming and stuff like that. I was like, okay. All right. That was the part that I like audibly laughed. Like, I was like, okay, I cackled.
I got you.
But yeah, I mean, there's some really good quotable lines of the, you think America is the only human civilization on Earth? Well, that's what the Americans seem to think. Like that's such a great line. Like there is comedy beats inside of it.
There's a subtle one that I liked. If you read a specific male human's mind, he'll be like, think about baseball, think about sports, Rock Hudson. Oh, no, 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 no. And what's funny about that is that Rock Hudson was this very famous, macho, strapping American actor of this era. And in the 70s or early 80s, he came out as gay. So it's kind of like you have this guy having thoughts about Rock Hudson, but it's like, oh, reject them. No, he's the ultimate man's man. But like, no, he was closeted his entire life. So they sneak some good references in there.
And it's just really funny. All right. So I'm going to look directly into camera and I'm going to say this. I am the furthest thing from a political person, but I love political jokes on both sides of the spectrum. Okay. But towards the end of the game, where they're getting ready to get into the pods, and the one guy's like, oh, I'm not too sure about this. And the jock guy goes, you heard the president. If it's good for him, then it's good for us. And it just made me laugh because of all the crazy shit that's been going on in this world. It's just, I'm just like, okay. Like, it's so funny, though, that some of these jokes here are carrying weight to 2020. When it really shouldn't. But that's the thing now. Are people going to use this as a political stance? Oh, I can't believe they're doing it. They're picking the wrong side. They're doing that. Like, who gives a shit?
Are you saying that within a week of Destroy All Humans' release, we're going to have people like, keep your politics out of my alien games? And it's just like, the things they're making fun of, the blind patriotism, that existed in the 50s, you know? Because the government made it all, you're either American or you're a communist. And so the government made us all paranoid back then. And, you know, there's government paranoia stirring happening today. So yeah, there's certain beats in American history that just happen over and over again. So yeah, I agree with you completely. I think I also agree that, like, it's kind of like sadly funny how time just repeats itself.
It is just crazy though, because that's what I'm afraid of when this game does get re-released here in the upcoming weeks. That are people going to see this as a political stance for the left or the right, or, you know, being a caricature of what people are acting like when it comes to the politics and stuff out there. It's going to be sad because, like, it's a dated game. And are they going to keep the same references? Are they going to change some things around? Like, I don't know.
The only thing I truly know about the development is, I'll tell you, none of they're reusing all of the audio dialogue files. There was no re-recording. They
got the originals.
What?
And so, like, no, seriously. The originals were just super compressed for the PS2 Xbox era. But with this remake, I read that they were like, great, now we can have the audio play out in its most crisp recording, so we don't have to re-record anything. So all the dialogue is being reused. I don't know if all of it's going to be used.
Oh, I hope not, because it would sound so crappy.
To me, it just sounds like, you know, whether or not they cut things out of the script, everything that was recorded for the script is being kept. You know what I mean? They can drop things, but they can't change things.
Still, they're going to still have the Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yeah. Crypto will be Jack Nicholson the whole time. I'm sorry to tell you.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Man. So overall, what was your final verdict on this game, Tom?
Well, I can't talk about my final verdict without just diverting into one thing. The thing I truly love the most about this, if I can tell you.
Sure. Go ahead.
Bonus features, baby.
Oh.
This game not only had some cool bonus features, such as E3 booth footage from when this game was debuted at E3. They had an actual making of, styled in the look of a 1950s government propaganda film, where the developers of the game were in government custody being interviewed about the game. But most importantly, packed into this game are two complete B-movies from this era. Teenagers from Outer Space and Plan 9 from Outer Space. The Ed Wood classic, quote-unquote, are built into this game. It's so good, in my opinion. Like, this is a game that's not only trying to evoke the style of these movies, but it's like, here's what we did for reference. You know what I mean? That'd be like God of War putting Clash of the Titans in it as a bonus feature or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I will say the game goes hard in being a parody of everything.
Yeah.
But it's to the point where it's a parody that works. The only problem is being able to play it is what makes it difficult. Because just like some of the story beats and stuff like that are funny, and some references are awesome. Like they're laughable and whatnot, but getting from point A to point B, the journey is harder than the actual destination.
I could agree with you completely. The universe, the tone, the design, and like the idea, great on paper. Execution? Yeah. So we can only hope that the remake will bring that out. But so
maybe quality of life stuff. Yes, they fix some quality of life things. But
yeah,
I feel like we're giving away the game at this point, Josh. But you know, back to your question, I'll even throw it to you this time. What's your opinion of this game?
It's a THQ game. Is the best way I can say it. It is a solid 5 out of 10. It's okay. One of those things you just put it in to kill 2-3 hours with friends and stuff like that, just making fun of a game, almost like watching a bad movie, sitting down and watching a bad movie together, like just laughing at it and joking around about it and stuff like that, is the same idea that you can have with this game, is just to sit down and just laugh and joke around as you're shoving stuff up people's asses.
a classic pastime. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. It's interesting literally as a cultural like time marker, you know, like this tells you what gaming was at its most like mid-level at this, you know. It's not a classic. I can't say it's a bottom of the barrel piece of crap, but like when you're just average, this is average 05 gaming. And as we said just now, a great concept that just wasn't taken all the way. Are you going to play the remake? Not at all, or not initially?
If there's a demo out there, or if there's a copy, or I can get like some just to test it out, because I'm not going to pay $50-$60 for this game. Maybe like $10 on sale. Like if it's on a digital sale or something like that, I might pick it up. But if it's going to be beat for beat the same game, what's the point?
Right. I would do some research personally and see what happens. And yeah, maybe a sale. Not to be mean, but I think I could see this as a game that really goes down quick and by Black Friday. Maybe
and I feel bad saying stuff like this too, because it like these people worked hard to make it, but like of all games to remake, you pick Destroy All Humans.
My only hope is that they picked it because they want to give it a sincere second shot. We mentioned that this spawned a franchise. It got a sequel on the Xbox 360 and PS3, which is a direct sequel. And then it also got a Wii kind of side sequel. And then there was a fourth game called Destroy All Humans Path of the Furon, which was met with extraordinarily bad reviews. And that's what basically killed the series.
Yeah. We'll see. I know that the remake here is coming out on Tuesday, July 28th. So it's coming out right around the corner, 2 days from the release of this episode.
Right. So we'll be very soon living in a Destroy All Humans remake world. And we'll have to see what happens.
Hey, how does it feel to know that they did a remake of Destroy All Humans before they did a remake of Resident Evil 4?
Well...
And with that, this has been A Cast of the Past. Thank you very much. Until next time, we'll see you in the future.
How dare you.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.